Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, I'm going to spend some time talking about the hilarious collapse of Ron DeSantis' presidential campaign. The state of Florida is going to hell under DeSantis' watch. And as bad as things are down here, it's nowhere near as bad as DeSantis has been on the campaign trail, if you can believe it. We also have the MyPillow guy who is in such financial dire straits that he is now having to auction off parts of his company just to be able to afford to continue doing business. And of course, I've got some Q&As from our YouTube community members. They've got questions, I've got answers. All that is coming up on this week's Ring of Fire. And don't forget, you can help support the show by signing up and becoming a member at rofpodcast.com. And you can get Ring of Fire every day of the week on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Before I get into the Q&As this week, I do want to take some time to talk about Ron DeSantis' horrific presidential campaign. Because in the last 2 weeks, there have been polls showing DeSantis collapsing. He's losing now in his own home state of Florida. There's been articles about how Rupert Murdoch, the owner of Fox News and pretty much a lot of conservative media throughout the planet, he is now panicked that DeSantis is doing so bad. There's been reports that DeSantis' own advisors are wanting to pull him off the campaign trail and replace him with his wife because they think maybe she'll be more likable. But all of this points to the thing that I have been saying for the last year, and that is that DeSantis, when you pull him out of his element here in the state of Florida, cannot and does not play on a national stage. And everything that we have seen from Ron DeSantis since this collapse began, going all the way back to March, and he didn't announce his presidential run till May, but going back to March is when things really started to go downhill for Ron DeSantis. That was the last time, by the way, that DeSantis was beating President Biden in head-to-head matchup polling. Now, let's start with the polling. Last week, we got a new poll showing that Ron DeSantis has now hit his lowest point since announcing his run for president. Ron DeSantis in the Republican primary, according to this new poll from Morning Consult, is now polling at 17%. DeSantis has not polled below 20% since before March. And let's not forget, going back even further than March, back in January and December, we had polls coming out of both Iowa and New Hampshire showing DeSantis on top of Donald Trump. So DeSantis was already poised to win the first two contests for the Republican Party, which would have put him on a fairly easy path to victory. He was polling in the high 20s. At one point, he did almost hit 30%. And now he's lost about half of that support and is now polling at 17%, a 6-point drop from the previous polls of a week and a half ago where he was at 23%. In the state of Florida, DeSantis is now losing to Donald Trump by 24 points. Trump's at 57%, DeSantis is at 33%. So DeSantis's campaign is imploding at a speed that we have not seen, honestly, since I've been doing this. You know, yes, in 2015, 2016, we saw Jeb Bush, his campaign did implode, but it didn't implode until we were right at the start of the actual primaries and caucuses. DeSantis is imploding before we even get to the debates. We're a month away. Less than a month away at this point, from that first Republican debate that's going to take place on Fox News. And what's happening with the DeSantis campaign? Well, like I said, you have Republican analysts, Republican strategists, and even those close to DeSantis in his campaign that say, we want to pull him off the campaign trail. Like, we actually want him to stop campaigning. We don't want him out there talking to people anymore. And instead, you've got Casey DeSantis, Ron DeSantis' wife. Last Thursday, she actually launched a new group with the governor of Iowa, who was just viciously attacked by Donald Trump, by the way, called Mamas for DeSantis. Yeah, we didn't want to go with Moms for DeSantis. We wanted it to sound a little bit more homey, so we went with Mamas for DeSantis. Because Casey DeSantis is, in fact, a condescending, opportunist. And there's been plenty of reports over the last month that Casey is actually the one behind the scenes that has more ambition than Ron, basically pushing him to do what he is not qualified to be doing in the first place. So they want to pull Ron off. They want to send Casey out there. And at this point, I think it's too late to stop the bleeding. Because here's what's happened. And I've said this repeatedly, you know, on our YouTube channel, but I want to say it again here because it is the most accurate thing, the most accurate way to describe what's happening with DeSantis' campaign. He has nothing to talk about. Every interview he does, every speech he does, every time he talks to people, what does he say? It's woke this, woke that, woke, 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 woke. He can't define it. His lawyers were literally asked in court to define it, and they failed to do it. And the voters are getting sick of it. Even the hardcore Republican culture warriors don't want to hear it anymore. They actually want to hear, like, okay, we get the woke thing. We got it, bud. You don't have to keep saying it. What we want to know is, what are you going to do for the actual country, man? Like, what are you going to do for us? What are you going to do about the economy? Because you can't just woke it to death. What are you going to do about foreign relations with China? You can't just say that they're woke and move on. Like, you got to give us real answers. And DeSantis is incapable of doing it because it turns out he's actually a pretty crappy politician. You want evidence of that? How about we look at what's happening in the state of Florida? Late last week, we got the report saying that across the country, inflation had fallen to just 3%, which was the lowest point it has been in 3 years. So across the board, inflation is falling in every state except one. There is only one state in the country that is watching inflation rise. And I'm pretty sure y'all know which state that is. Florida. In the state of Florida, inflation this past month has hit 9%. So the state of Florida is now witnessing an inflation rate three times higher than the rest of the country. On top of that, we have friggin' malaria spreading through our state, and Ron DeSantis hasn't even addressed that. Like, diseases that we thought, oh no, that's just third world country stuff. We don't have any of that in the industrialized world. Well, guess what? We got it in Florida, and the cases are spreading. You want to know what else is happening here in the state of Florida? Well, last week, Ron DeSantis decided that a gift from the Biden administration of $377 million for energy efficiency wasn't needed. So Ron DeSantis literally turned down nearly $400 million in free money from the Biden administration that would have created jobs, it would have brought income, and hell, it would have helped lower our power bills and gas bills here in the state of Florida. And DeSantis said, no, I don't want your gifts, Biden. Screw you. Oh, it gets worse. We just had our second largest insurer, home insurer, here in the state of Florida pull out of the state. Not pull out of certain areas, pull out of the state. Farmers Insurance will no longer provide home insurance for homeowners here in the state of Florida. And that's the second major insurance company to pull out of the state in the last couple months. So we can't insure our homes. We have the highest home price increase in the country, which is what's driving our high inflation along with several other factors. The state of Florida is going to hell under Ron DeSantis's watch, and of course, thanks to almost 30 years at this point of solid Republican rule. This is what Republicans do. We've got diseases that you're not supposed to see in America ravaging people in the state of Florida. We've got insurers leaving the state because we're not doing anything to mitigate the risks of climate change and rising sea level in our state. And all of that is directly related to Ron DeSantis's policies, because we have a health department that is without a leader, so they can't even address the malaria issue. So yes, that is a DeSantis failure for anybody thinking, well, DeSantis didn't bring malaria. Nope. But he hasn't appointed anyone to fill the position to actually do something about it. And that's what's happening. That's what Ron DeSantis is. So when he says out there on the campaign trail that he wants to make America Florida, that's a threat. Like, that is legitimately a threat to the country. I'm going to make America Florida. Do you want malaria in your state? Do you want the insurance companies to pull out so that your house is no longer covered? Do you want a state that declines hundreds of millions of dollars in free money from the federal government that would save you money? Because if you do, then DeSantis is the candidate for you. But if you live in reality, if you understand what it means to be a good leader, then I can imagine that Ron DeSantis is probably not your candidate of choice, right? Well, let's be honest. If you're listening to this podcast, then I have to imagine no Republican is your candidate of choice at this point. But this is dire, right? This is bad, what's happening to us here in the state of Florida. And I'm glad, by the way, not that these are happening, but I'm glad that DeSantis is imploding. I'm glad that people are waking up to the reality of the hell under which we're living here in Florida. People see it and they don't want it to happen to them, which is one of the biggest reasons why Ron DeSantis is not only not able to gain traction, but he's losing ground now to his Republican rivals, not just Donald Trump either. And you know what? While we're talking about conservatives having a hard time, I got to spend a couple minutes talking about MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, because this story to me is hilarious. I love talking about Mike Lindell because he's such a whack job. But what's happening is that Mike Lindell claims, of course, that he has been the victim of a cancel culture. They did a cancel culture on us, he says, as his company has lost more than $100 million, according to a new report from the Salt Lake Tribune. Here's the thing. Mike Lindell, of course, decided to go all in for Donald Trump. He's gone all in on the election lies. He's promised to show us all this information in his multiple different cyber symposiums, and he's failed to do it. He's actually got another kind of symposium thing coming up next month where he is going to unveil, in his words, God's plan to save democracy. He's been hyping that up for about a month, and we got another month of hype before he's going to give us God's plan. You know, you would think, by the way, that if God gave you a plan to save the country, you wouldn't want to sit on it for a couple months, right? You'd be like, yes, sir, God, I'm gonna go do this. We're going to take care of it. Thank you for the plan. It's like if Moses was handed the Ten Commandments and then just, you know, didn't hand them out to people for a couple years after that. Like, no, he's like, okay, I got to go give these to the people. These are things they probably need to know because it's from God himself, right? But anyway, Mike Lindell is now having to auction off equipment from his MyPillow company so that he can pay the bills. And I'm not just talking about, you know, we're getting rid of a couple things here and there. We're talking about massive, real equipment that is necessary to be able to run a business. He's auctioning off sewing machines, which are kind of necessary to be able to build pillows. He's auctioning off their delivery trucks. Not all of them. Just the ones he claims, you know, the surplus. Yeah, surplus because you're not selling enough pillows to warrant the trucks that you have. He's auctioning off the forklifts that move the products around his factories and warehouses. You know, we're not selling as much, so we don't need the forklifts. Let's get rid of those. He's auctioning off desks, chairs, computers, you know, things in the office that people need so that they can do their jobs. There's so little work that he's getting rid of this equipment, just auctioning it off so that he can keep the lights on. On top of that, of course, he probably needs to be worried about the hundreds of millions of dollars that he is currently facing in defamation lawsuits. So, you know, I imagine you probably want a little extra cash for that. Now, based on the estimates that I have seen, Mike Lindell has a net worth maybe around about $330 million. Of course, that was about 6 months ago, and those online estimates are always a little over those same estimates say that I am worth like $1.1 million, and I can promise you that's like $1 million more than I am worth. But if he has $330 million and he's lost $100 million in revenue this year, and he says he spent $40 million of his own dollars, you know, fighting this 2020 election results, and he's facing hundreds of millions of dollars in defamation lawsuits, you kind of get the picture that maybe this guy could end up broke before the end of the year. I mean, that's the way I'm looking at this. Your business is going under because you attached your disturbing politics to it. You didn't have to do that. You have every right to do it if you choose to do it. You know, I'm not saying you can't do it, but I am saying you shouldn't have done it. And when you saw the impact that it was having on your company, you didn't reverse course. You doubled down, you tripled down, you quadrupled down. You kept doing it until your company was falling apart to the point where you have to sell it off piece by piece. I mean, we're at this point, it seems like we're only a few months away from Lindell going into the studio and, you know, ripping all the copper out of the walls so he can sell it. I mean, things are bad for Mike Lindell. And he can blame the retailers, the big box stores, all he wants. But the truth is, things are going bad for MyPillow because Mike Lindell did it to himself. And having said all that, let's now jump in to our Q&A portion for this week. These are questions, of course, submitted by our YouTube community members. If you want to get in on future Q&As, go subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Keep an eye on that community tab because that's where I put out the posts asking for the questions. Here they are. First question is from YouTuber 2010 Big Fat Hen. 2010 Big Fat Hen says, great channel. I've been wondering why Dominion and Smartmatic have not sued the hell out of the orange Jesus of the Republican Party. You know, that's a great question. And that's actually a question that I've posed in many videos. Because we know that Dominion and Smartmatic, right, they sued Newsmax, One America, Fox News, Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, Mike Lindell. They have sued anyone and everyone that has gone out there spreading these baseless lies about the companies. They've settled some of the lawsuits with some of the media outlets. They've got the one with Powell, Giuliani, and Lindell still pending. But nobody's hit Trump for any of these lies. And Trump has said the same things about these companies. So there's no reason why they shouldn't also be suing him. To me, that kind of seems like the biggest fish. And if they continue to sit and wait, they may hit a statute of limitations to where they're not able to use some of Trump's strongest claims against him in a lawsuit. So I 100% think that they should be suing Donald Trump, but as to why they're not, I have no clue. That makes no sense to me because it seems like that would be a slam dunk case, much like all of these other cases. So they should, but for some reason they're not. Here's a question from YouTube user Glenn Bateman 59660, who says, why do you think people keep saying Trump might go to prison when there is no way that is ever going to happen, no matter how many felony convictions he racks up? I think for a lot of people, saying that Trump is going to prison is a way to make them feel better. You know, it's almost like a form of self-therapy, really. Trump inflicted tremendous harm on this country, and a lot of people want to see him brought to justice. And the thought of him going to prison, the thought of him in one of those orange jumpsuits, the thought of him on the side of the highway, you know, having to pick up trash, that makes a lot of people feel better. It makes me feel better. So I think a lot of it is that kind of, you know, a coping mechanism a little bit. But I do also think we can't rule out that possibility. Now, I agree with you. I do think that even if we hit Trump with all of these felonies, even if he's convicted of every single thing, I think the odds of him going to prison are just so low because he is the former president that it almost does seem impossible, yes. But it's not impossible. Okay. The possibility still exists that Donald Trump could go to jail. Again, I know it's a long shot. I know it's probably not going to happen, even if you secure all of these convictions. Just the precedent that it would set, I think you would end up with, you know, a president, if it's a Republican, possibly even Biden, saying, listen, okay, we're not going to do that. You know, and so whether it's because they don't sentence him to prison or whether it's through some kind of pardon, I just don't see it happening. But that doesn't mean it won't happen. So it's kind of a weird fence to be riding right now, but I think that's where we're at with whether or not Trump is actually going to go to prison. Here's a question from Michael Owen 6113, who asks, Farron, you do an amazing job and you keep your fans educated and guide us through all the other media BS. Well, thank you. My question for you, sir, is, quote, regardless if they are running for office or not, which Democrats would be the best or effective against Trump in 2024 and possibly benefit the United States the most? Who would be your president and VP candidates for 2024? Now, I've talked about who my ideal candidates would be. I do have a list of people. Katie Porter's at the top. Stacey Abrams is on that list. Elizabeth Warren is on that list. Gavin Newsom is on that list. Jeff Merkley is on that list. But who would be the most effective at beating Donald Trump in 2024? At this point, based on the way things have unfolded this year, I think Gavin Newsom would probably be the strongest Democratic candidate you could put up right now, because he has emerged as really one of the most outspoken people to fight back, not just against Donald Trump, but against Ron DeSantis. You know, he is out there positioning himself for a future presidential run 100%. But he's positioning himself as the anti-DeSantis. You know, DeSantis is crippling the state of Florida, the state of California, minus the natural disasters, by comparison, is doing much better. Oh, but all that crime in California, Farron, you're forgetting about that. Nope, you're ignoring the fact that statistics actually show that crime is worse in the state of Florida than it is in California. So even though Republicans like to talk about what a hellhole California is, it's only because they're selectively choosing which statistics they want to read. And if they looked into it, they would see that we actually have many areas here in the state of Florida with higher murder rates, higher property crime rates, higher rates of assault. Everything, you name it, is actually worse here in Florida than it is in California. So I think Gavin Newsom would be positioned as the best person to win in 2024 because he's the only person really running for a future presidential bid. You know, if Katie Porter had her eyes on the presidency right now and was actually trying to position herself as such for the future, I would probably be picking her as the best suited for 2024. If that makes any sense to you, right? Like, Gavin Newsom's pretty much already running for president. That's why I say he's best suited right now. If these other people like Stacey Abrams or Katie Porter or Elizabeth Warren, if they were actively putting that together, I think they would also be in a good position to win in 2024. Since they're not, I would have to go with Gavin Newsom right now. Here's a question from Justin Ziegler, 5772, says, love your work, Farron, keep it up. Well, thank you very much. With the election in Jacksonville electing a Democrat mayor for the first time since 2015, could this be a sign that Florida could become a swing state, or is it more a flash in the pan in a red state? That's too early to tell. That is definitely way too early to tell from that one. It was a major election, what happened in Jacksonville, Florida, you know, getting not just a Democrat, but we're talking about like actually a progressive Democrat elected as mayor. That is a big deal. That is a massive victory. But we haven't had anything happen since then to tell us whether or not there is actually a shift taking place in Florida, or if it's just a one-off thing, right? We don't have any other elections necessarily to compare it to. But as I talked about earlier in the program, with all of these problems adding up here in the state of Florida, you know, home prices, inflation, malaria, denying federal money to help us taxpayers save money. This is a state that has not had a Democrat in power in that state office since 1998. So we're running on 25 straight years of solid Republican rule at the state level. But we're finally starting to see how disastrous that is. And I do think we have voters across the state waking up to that. And yes, we have had an influx of people moving into the state that are traditionally Republican. So the Republican population has actually increased. But we also had a significant decrease in certain parts of the Republican population in this state. It's a bit of a morbid topic, but it's a reality nonetheless. And of course, I'm talking about that population decline thanks to the COVID deaths that Ron DeSantis did nothing about. Pretended COVID wasn't a big deal, said, we're the free state of Florida. We're opening up before everybody, even though we closed after everybody. And we had a lot of Republicans in this state die. Now, we've had more Republicans move into the state than died from COVID, so Republicans are still poised to run the state. But if we can eke out these small victories like we did in Jacksonville, we might be able to transform this state. Are we going to transform it into a swing state before the 2024 election? Nope. Like 100%, that's not happening. It'll be a process, just like Texas. In all the years that I've been here at Ring of Fire, 19 years now, every year I've been here, there have been stories in some of the best, you know, most progressive and liberal magazines out there saying, oh, is this next election the one where Texas is turning blue? Oh, Texas is about to turn blue, folks. Just you wait. It's the next one. Texas is going to be blue. 19 years later, still seeing the stories, Texas ain't blue. So none of this happens overnight. None of it happens, you know, without that incremental change. And some of us don't like to wait for incremental change, right? Some of us want that immediate change right now because it's what we need in our lives and for our country. I get it. But patience is a virtue. It's a virtue that honestly I don't have. I'm not a patient person. I really am not. But we have to be. Because in order to flip, you know, these individual states, whether it's Florida, whether it's Texas, you know, Georgia, didn't happen overnight, but it all starts with strong party leadership. And I do think with Nikki Fried now in charge of the Florida Democratic Party, I think we finally have strong leadership, and it could eventually lead to Florida becoming a swing state once again. It definitely is not right now. It will not be in the next cycle, probably not the next one after that either. But 10, 15 years down the road, there's a good chance we could be. Here's a question from Dan Corkill 7033. Dan Corkill asks, do you secretly have a man crush on Trump? What an idiotic question. Like, I don't even really know how to respond to that because it is, in fact, so stupid. If you're asking why I talk about Trump as much as I do, even though we actually do have plenty of days where I don't talk about him at all, it's because he's running for president of the United States. He is the former president of the United States. And I don't know if you've noticed this. He's in the news a lot. And people want to know what that psychopath is up to on any given day. It doesn't mean I have a man crush on him. It just means that I know what's news and what isn't. And unfortunately, sometimes we have to talk about the big buffoon even when we don't want to. I have to talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene when I don't want to, but you're not asking me if I have a crush on her. I got to talk about Lauren Boebert. You're not asking me if I got a crush on her. Yeah, I talk about Hunter Biden. You think I got a crush on him too? No. What a stupid, idiotic question. Thank you. Next question is from YouTube user GuessWho1235. They ask, why is there no inquiry of the Democrats that were involved in January 6th? There is no way you can work in small quarters like they do with all of them and their aides, yet never heard a thing. Apparently no water cooler or restrooms in House of Representatives. No accountability for Capitol Hill. BS! Here's the thing. Again, I love these kind of weird almost borderline stupid questions. What Democrats are you talking about? Like, if you're going to say, why are Democrats not being held accountable? You got to give me some names, because you can't just put out pure speculation. Because let me lay this out for you. I don't know if you've ever toured Congress or even seen pictures of Congress in the layout. It's not like a typical office, okay? You're not sitting there with your office right next to the other person. There's no doors. You're in a bunch of cubicles. There's a centralized break room. That's not a thing. They do have their own offices. Their offices are pretty damn massive. They've got their own water in there. They have their own bathrooms. Yes, there are communal bathrooms for when they have to run out of the house, but they're not spending a ton of time in there. They go to their quarters. They meet with other, lobbyists, people who come through, tour groups. They're not spending a lot of time in these so-called close quarters. Not to mention the fact that, oh yes, we have Republicans involved in January 6th and the attempts to overturn the election. Sure we do. We know that. But those were the people that were working directly with the White House. And where were they doing it? They were doing it in the White House. They weren't doing it in the halls of Congress with their cell phone on speakerphone, just talking loudly in the hallway for everybody walking by to hear them do it. And technically, as it is right now, none of them have been charged with any criminal wrongdoing. So why could we assume that Democrats should also be charged with criminal wrongdoing when they didn't know what was going on? So, weird question. I hope I answered it. But either way, I'm moving on now to some real stuff. Here's a question from Megatoon Z Network, who asks, "Hello, Mr. Cousins. Love the work you do as always. Now for my question, a hypothetical one, one to which I hope doesn't happen. But what do you think would happen if, let's say, we have a DeSantis or a Trump and they decided to put not only boots on the ground in China, but start to bomb the country like Tic Tacs for an election strategy? At that point, do you think that they would suffer tremendous consequences if they do something stupid like that, or would they get away with it?" I think they'd get away with it. Look at Iraq. Hey, look at Afghanistan. We were told by the Bush administration, we got to attack these countries, specifically Iraq, obviously. You know, we got to get Saddam Hussein. And then when the 2004 election rolled around, what was their talking point? You can't change course in the middle of a war. You don't change horses midstream. You got to keep us in power. We started this war and we're best suited to finish it. It was almost a wag the dog type situation. They used the war to convince people that they have to stay in power because they were the only ones who understood what was really happening in the war. And if you had a DeSantis, go out and bomb China after Republicans have spent many years now telling us that China is the greatest threat to everything we know and love, and oh my God, they're horrible to us. China's got massive human rights violations. I'm not even going to pretend that they don't. They have massive labor violations, obviously, that the United States, by the way, takes clear advantage of. But in terms of being an actual threat to the safety or security of us here in the United States, they're no more of a threat to us than we currently are to them. They are a nuclear superpower. Attacking China would be tantamount to suicide, just like attacking Russia would be. We would have mutually assured destruction. So I do not think that attacking China would be a smart decision at all. Not to mention the fact that we literally have no justification for any kind of attack on China. Yes, they do horrible things. But, you know, we then go back to overstepping our bounds as the world police, and that never ends well for the United States, ever. I mean, the history of the last 60 years, 70 years tells us that. We are not good at it. But I wouldn't put it past them. I will say that. I would not put it past these people. Because they know Americans are terrified of war. They're terrified of China because they've made them terrified of China. And a good old-fashioned war is one of the best ways for Republicans to retain power. And for the record, would have happened in the 1992 election with George H.W. Bush had Ross Perot not siphoned off enough Republican votes to let Bill Clinton win. So they've done it before. They will probably do it again. We just have to wait and see which election that'll be. Here's a question from Maureen Kissinger, 911, who asks, what's your thoughts on Biden not adding to the Supreme Court, especially in light of the current rulings and the questionable ethics of several SCOTUS judges? I'm furious. I am beyond pissed off, and I do think this is one of the biggest failures, if not the biggest failure, of the Biden administration. He came into office not wanting to expand that court. Like, let's be clear about that. No question about it. He didn't want to expand the court. So what did he do? He put together his little Supreme Court commission, right? These folks that I've picked are going to go out there and then tell us if we should expand the court. And they spent months and months behind closed doors allegedly studying this and looking at it and figuring things out. And then they came out and said, nah, let's not do it. Why? See, you never really gave us any clear reasons as to why we shouldn't do it. And then, of course, after you told us we shouldn't do it because, oh, it's not going to be that big of a deal, we had Roe versus Wade overturned. We just had affirmative action and college admissions overturned. We have had countless rulings that hurt consumers and benefit corporations in the years since your little commission said, no, let's not do it. And, of course, now with these massive ethics scandals when Clarence Thomas's just seems to get worse by the day, for this administration to not come out and admit, we made a mistake, we're going to push this, we're going to do this. Expanding the Supreme Court is not a crazy idea. It has been done multiple times throughout the history of the United States. The court is made to be expanded, and we don't even have to have a constitutional amendment to do that. We have to have a constitutional amendment to put term limits on them, but not to expand that court. Problem is, you got idiots like Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema over there in the Senate who don't want to do anything to make waves, right? They don't want to do anything to piss off their Republican friends. So until the Democrats get the numbers in the Senate to defeat Manchin and Sinema and all the Republicans, expanding that court probably won't be an option. Now, if Biden wins re-election and Democrats hold on to the Senate, we may see a different story, right? Because obviously, if Democrats hold the Senate, Joe Manchin's going to lose. Sinema's not going to be a Democrat, so they will have the numbers to overcome that. And so I think in a second term where Biden knows he doesn't have to face any consequences from it in a re-election, we may see something else. But until then, that's one of his biggest failures. And a lot of people in this country, millions of people, hundreds of millions, are paying the price for it. Here's a question from Maynard Mustaine, who asks, please talk about conservatives need to always need something to obsess over, specifically speaking about the current obsession, the movie The Sound of Freedom. I will say I'm not familiar with The Sound of Freedom. I don't know what that is, actually, but I do know quite a bit about the Republicans' obsessions, right? Because there's always an obsession with the Republican Party. Because obsessions are distractions. This is actually something that Chauncey DeVega and I have talked about in all of the interviews that he and I have done together over the years. And that is, Republicans like to do several different things. The first, and this is what Chauncey and I talk about, they obsess over the others, right? And the others can be many different things. And over the years, it has been many different things. For Reagan, the others were the black people on welfare, right? The lazy welfare queens living off the government while you're working your fingers to the bones. That's how Reagan won his election. Then, of course, the others morphed into Muslims. They're terrorist folks. They destroyed the World Trade Center on 9/11. Those are the others. Those are the bad guys. You got to be wary of the others. Then the others was the gay people. Oh, no, they're coming for us, all the gay people. Then it's morphed into the transgender folks. Those are the others. With Trump, it was the immigrants were the others. They're taking your jobs. That's the reason your life sucks. That's the reason you're not getting a raise. It's always the others. And they harp on it and obsess about it and they create these fantastical stories about how these people are ruining your life so that you don't look at who's actually ruining your life, which is, you know, the millionaires, the billionaires, and the Republican politicians. They make you focus on the others. They make you obsess about it so that you point the fingers at the others instead of pointing the fingers at the politicians telling you to hate the others. They do the same thing with the culture war issues. They did it with abortion. Oh my God, abortion is the scourge of the United States, we were told for decades. It didn't affect you. The only way it affected you is if you were walking into an abortion clinic to have an abortion. Other than that, none of your damn business. Your life went on just fine. Nothing changed in your life. But they convinced a bunch of the stupidest people that the country has to offer that that is the biggest problem that we're facing and you need to do something about it. Same thing with transgender women participating in women's sports. Does it affect you? No. Does it have any bearing on your life at all? No. Do you even watch women's sports? Probably not. You just want something to obsess over. You talk to women who actually play women's sports. They don't seem to mind that much. Yes, you do have a couple instances here and there. Oh, I didn't win, so I'm going to be mad at this person. It's all a big distraction. Because your life is not affected. Your life doesn't change if they ban transgender women from competing in women's sports. Your life goes on the same. You still get screwed over by your employer. They still steal wages from you. You're still getting priced out of the housing market. You're still getting corporate toxins dumped into your rivers and waterways and all over your soil. Nothing changed in your life. But you did manage to persecute a hell of a lot of people along the way and make their lives a little bit worse. That's why Republicans obsess over these idiotic things. Because they can continue abusing you. Their donors can continue abusing you because they got you distracted by these little shiny objects. And the Democratic Party needs to do a much better job of pointing this out. I mean, it's so obvious to all of us. It's obvious to you listening to this. It's obvious to me talking about it. I do this every day. But the Democratic Party has dropped the ball on the messaging, and if they could get just a little bit better at that, maybe the rest of the country will wake up to the fact that Republicans have been leading you down these paths that lead to nowhere just so you stop seeing how horrible they really are. Listen, that is all the time we have for this week. Again, if you want to help support the program, please sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com. For more Ring of Fire every day of the week, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. I'm Farron Cousins. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and now on Threads and TikTok even, at Farron Balanced on each one of those platforms. Thank you all so much for tuning in this week. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I'll talk to you next time.